This is a View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Wednesday, the 16th of November, 2016, and my name is Patrick Smith. You'd think with a six-point weekend, I'd be in great form, but as you can hear, I'm grumpy, I'm tired, I'm loaded with the cold, and I can't talk for shit. I hate to do this to you, but I'm calling up Hitchcock.
Good evening and welcome to this week's episode of A View from the Bridge. As you probably just heard, poor old Patrick Smith is suffering from the common cold. So I, Mark Hitchcock, will be presenting this week. I am sure you're all delighted about that. As always, well, it seems to be the same two chaps that I'm joined with whenever I'm standing in recently. Firstly, a good evening to Mr. David Majimsey. Hello, David.
Good evening, Hitchy. It's only because Aaron hit you. And, you know, to be fair, Paddy told me he has the man flu, not rather than a common cold. So I suppose best wishes to Mr. Smith, the Director General. Hope you get well soon, son.
Absolutely. Hashtag pray for Paddy. And I'm also joined by a man who's been torn away from the settee and his Lisa Snowden addiction from I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. From bitch side to pitch side, it's Premier Sports, Simon Kitchen.
Hi, gents. How are you?
Very well, Simon.
It's going to be one of these nights, Sis.
It's just the introduction. Hitchy's fantastic at it. Knock yourself out, mate.
You're very welcome. So whenever I host this show, it always seems to be on the back of a very, very positive week for your Stirling Belfast Giants. And can you get any more positive than a six-point weekend? It all started on Friday night with the visit of the Five Flyers. A 4-0 win for the Giants, a power play goal from Riley, followed by Shields, Benedict and Martinelli. Fife got nil goals and nil points. Going first to you, Davey, a big weekend for the Giants, but a bit of a rocky up and down spell over the previous weekends. Three huge games. It was important to set the tone on Friday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. We talked last week's show about having to come out best foot forward, as TV's Neil Coach Russell would say. And, you know, I think we did that. And especially David Rutherford, you know, drove the net hard, drove that blue paint. And he drew penalties consistently all night. I'm sure three or four of the power plays were down to, you know, really taking guys on and drawing penalties. Now, the power plays for me, he says I'll maybe come back on this. The first couple of power plays, although we got goals on them, weren't great. If you know, great that we've got a goal on them. The passing wasn't. We'd give it with a lot of turnovers on them, we give away. And it was even a bad pass from Walser to Vandermeer, who's turned it into a good pass, played it off a skate and got it out there and threw it in front. And Blair Riley's standing like a statue in front of the Fife goalie, blocking his view and gets the tip on it. Absolutely superb. Just one of those power plays that we needed, because we've been having lots of looks in the power play and not getting the puck across the line. So that's what we needed. Shields' power play goal is a boom from the, you know, the top of the circle. Goalie hasn't moved, popped the water bottle. Beautiful thing to see. And, you know, but apart from that, you know, it was, as you say, we came out with the good intentions. We got the crowd into it. Not a massive crowd on Friday night. Obviously, Saturday night was the big game on the weekend. And, you know, a lot bigger crowd there. But, you know, we were down. We worked hard with block shots. Stephen Murphy had an outstanding game between the pipes. And, you know, there was opportunities both ways. And when we had to shut it down, we shut it down. Stephen Murphy stood up tall, kept the puck out of the net. Defence did well. And when we had our chances, we took them really well.
Now, I saw a stat earlier online saying that there's only one team in the Elite League who have conceded less than the Giants so far this season. So is that Sheffield, who've played less games than the Giants? Who in particular in the D core have you seen as being pivotal to that? And obviously Murphy himself in goal with the first shutout of the season for the Giants.
Well, to be honest with Hitchy, I mean, we've been through a stage there where, you know, there wasn't anybody standing out, and it was just a collective input into trying to keep the puck away from the front lineette and keeping the guys there outside. But Martinelli in the last couple of weeks has really started to glue things together. And I don't know if it's a genius move to put Mark Garside back on defence alongside Martinelli, but he seems to play that little bit tighter to a certain extent. when he's playing with Garside and what he did when he was with Quinnell. But, you know, Walser is, it's renowned that when Derek Walser's on his game, he's the top D man in the league, if not the top two. And Jim Van der Meer, again, I still don't think Jim Van der Meer is playing at 100%. I still think he's sort of bedding himself in, and he's going to get better as towards the further season goes in. But I just think it's a collective group effort. I don't think anybody's really stood out. But Stephen Murphy has been excellent in the last 2 weekends. And, you know, the games over the weekend, we'll talk about Cardiff and we'll talk about the Edinburgh game. But Stephen Murphy was excellent on Friday night. He was excellent on Saturday night. And he obviously got a rest on Sunday night.
I mean, going to you, Davey, talking about Murph in particular, you've got three netminders there in Belfast. Two, you would say, main netminders in Dicko, who came in on Sunday. But Stephen Murphy really given Coach Derek Walser a tough decision in terms of bringing in someone like Jackson Whistle with performances that he's pulling out of the bag at the moment.
I suppose there is, because professionally, Stephen Murphy will want to play every game, but On the flip side of that, we've seen, and like last year, we talked about Murphy after the Olympic break, when he got that break, when we had the games. Who do we play? Says team from Italy,
Bolzano
during the, and Murphy had a, you know, a week or two off there, and he came back refreshed, but he tired again towards the end of the season. This season, where he is able to get a bit of downtime, maybe not practicing every single day, not playing every single game, not having the travel and jump off a bus and go into games sometimes, you can see the difference in his game. He is at the one thing I text Sis, I don't know whether it was during the game or after the game, or Sis phoned me on Friday night after the game. There was one where Murphy's made a lovely, you know, butterfly down into it, and he sprung straight back up on his feet. Stephen Murphy's been getting up a wee bit sluggish over the last 18 months. There's no doubt about it. You know, the video evidence is there. He hasn't been as top of his game as he was 3 or 4 years. He is playing back at the level he was when he first came to Belfast, when he was backstopping us to championships. Stephen Murphy, this rest is doing him good. I don't think it is giving Walser a headache, because Walser is just going to roll with this 1-2 punch at the minute.
Okay. Now, there was an interesting incident during the game. Looking at the agenda put together by the Director General before, he's referred to this individual as a dirty stealer. The Russ Moyer-Adam Keefe incident, which has been looked at by DOPS today. There's been no ban given to Moyer, but he has had the incident upgraded from a 2+10 checking from behind penalty to a 5+ game. Bit of a strange one, that, Sis, where we saw what could be viewed as a cheap shot on Keefe, and then he just didn't seem to want anything to do with the Belfast captain.
No, I mean, there was a few guys saying that he's more like the Kevin Noble, the way he's been for the last 3 or 4 weeks and getting under everybody's skin. But there was a bit of barging, pushing, cross-checking just before that incident happened between Keefe and Moyer. Again, Moyer had cross-checked Keefe in front of the net at least 3 or 4 times, and referee Hogarth didn't give anything. But, you know, it's like, you know, Russ Moyer, when he was at Sheffield, I thought he was excellent, and I thought he'd had a really good game in the first and second period on Friday night. But after going 4-0 up, the Giants just took control, and you know, I don't know what he was thinking, because, you know, it's really taken that to bring out the real Adam Keefe. It was a bad, you know, cross check on the baseline, the back, and put Kiefer down. But when he jumped up and he dropped the gloves, I'm sitting thinking, happy days, he's Adam Keefe's back. And all of a sudden, a turtle appeared and tried to, you know, crawl across the ice, and you know, it's just that Russ Moyer, if he's going to basically do that, needs to stand up and take a hiding, because Keefer really would have took his head off.
And David, I hear you've got a stat associated with that incident.
I do. I didn't. I thought the cross-checking incidents prior to the check from behind were a lot worse, and surprised Hogarth never. Well, not surprised, but they weren't called. You know, the hit from behind that knocks Keefer down is more the element of surprise. He's not expecting it coming. It's not a massively hard hit or anything, but rightfully deserved a beatdown for it. Disappointed that Moyer turtled. But at that stage, Adam Keefe had 973 all-time franchise penalty minutes. And those couple of minutes, those 2-minute penalty and the 10 misconduct, took him over passed Paxton Schulte in the all-time franchise. He's now the all-time franchise leader in penalties and minutes. So I'm sure he would have liked to have done it without an opponent turtling against him, because, you know, he likes to do business the right way, Adam Keefe. But, you know, it's a little stat to look back on in his career that he'll be... It's probably a stat that'll last for a very long time. I was talking to Paxton Schulte last night, and Packer sends his congratulations, I suppose, to Keefer. The competitive animal in him, of course, asked how he's doing points per game compared to him. But, he was talking to Keefer just before he came on air as well, just letting him know we're going to be talking about that tonight and we're going to put it out tomorrow. And he's saying he'd give Packer a ring himself. And a bit of a batting pass in there, because obviously Schulte came in and was our first, if you want to call him, a franchise player. And Keefer really has took that role on. And it's only fitting that those two are mentioned in the same breath.
Well, congratulations, I suppose, to Mr. Keefe. Before we move on to the even bigger game on Saturday, first going to you, Simon. Five Flyers, they've been doing quite well this season. They're fourth in the table at the moment. They were actually second, I believe, before the weekend. Did you expect more from them on Friday?
I actually thought we played very well. You know, Five Flyers have come in. Our first game of the season, Five beat us 5-2. They came in a week later to the SSE and we'll beat them 4-2. And you know, your point was that was they expecting more? Yeah, I was, but we genuinely stopped them playing. You know, they looked confused at not being able and disappointed not being able to get into the middle. Everything was kept to the outside. Stephen Murphy was excellent. He came up with two or three great saves, and Shane Owen for the Five Flyers has been brilliant all season. He's leading the save percentage in the league for goalies, and he's been brilliant. And he, again, you know, we had 44 shots on Saturday, Friday night against the Five Flyers. So he was worked hard. But if you watch the third and fourth goal that we scored in the third period, he looked exhausted. He looked absolutely exhausted. He was flat down in the ice both after the puck went in the net. And maybe the guy just needs a bit of a break. You know, Davies talked about there a few minutes ago about Stephen Murphy looking revitalized and obviously getting that bit of a break between Whistle and Dicko coming in. And, I mean, I think Shane Owen could have... I actually think when we were 3-0 up, he should have thought about bringing Owen off and putting Craig Douglas in and just giving him a little bit of a break. Because when we scored the third and fourth goal, he was absolutely flat out in his face.
So a comfortable night for the Belfast Giants. Highlights in the usual place. Giants TV on YouTube. You can also find highlights of the next game on the same channel. It was the Cardiff Devils that skated.
Can I just interrupt, mate? I'm really sorry, but I watched the report coming in the day about the upgrade and penalty between, it was a 2+10, but he got 5+ game. Does anybody else get that? I just don't get the call. I mean, the referee called 2+10 there and then. And, you know, it's been talked about and debated with Dobbs about not re-refereeing games. But I don't understand when the game's done, it's over, and unless there's a suspension coming up on that, what's the point in upgrading it for the 5+ game?
Well, the comment on the website states, obviously, no suspension for a 5+ game. However, the penalty will remain on his personal record and may be considered in future review. So I guess it's trying to discourage him from similar incidents in the future. I mean... Davey, when you look at that, do you share Simon's feeling? Do you think either leave it or maybe even give the guy a ban for what happened there?
No, I don't think there's any ban on it. As I said in my piece earlier, I think the 2+10 was probably right, and more disappointed that Keefer took an extra 10 minutes for trying to sort it out on the ice, which is where it probably should have been sorted out. That didn't need, you know, that was almost an incident that didn't need looked at by Dobbs, but, you know, they've did what they've did, as you said. They've put that on his record. If he has another checking from behind incident, that'll maybe be levied against him if they're looking more towards a suspension. But I must say, that should have just been left on the ice. Let the referee's made that decision. I think it was a good enough call on the night.
Agreed.
Dobbs. so, yes, let's go for it. Next game was the Cardiff Devils flying high at the top of the league, friends of Iron Maiden, apparently. It was, again, a win for the Belfast Giants, a key win in the race for the title, as you already think it is, the race for the title against a team of the Devils' calibre. Goals from Higgins and two from Walser. That's two from Walser, and Gevel's goals from Morissette and Fournier. And this was a huge, huge, huge game in terms of laying down a marker, Davey. As I say, Cardiff, top of the league, doing very, very well indeed. And you didn't want anything less, really, than a regulation win to prove a point.
Yeah, especially as the two games we've played against Cardiff, the scoreline mightn't reflect it, but they were such tight games, and fine margins are what is going to decide this league this season, you know, and coming away with a one goal, you know, win was critical to trying to take a bit of momentum away from the Cardiff and getting a bit going ourselves. You know, we had to go on a bit of a run here. We need to go on a run. Obviously, we've got the next six games away from home, and it's going to be difficult to take points from all those. But, you know, if you just look at Saturday night, we came out of the blocks again, similar to Friday night. We came out well. We got the two goals to go ahead. You know, we were in pretty good control of the game. And, you know, we coughed up two goals. The first one that Morissette scores, okay, it's a lovely finish. But once again, we talked last week or the week before when Sizz was on, both D-men below the goal line. Morissette's found himself a little bit of space out front, got away from the two D-men. And the other one's just a really bad turnover in our own zone. Murphy gambles a little bit on the positioning, and Fournier flips it over his corner. But my goodness, what about Walser's finish, you know, to make it 3-2. The guy had a phenomenal weekend. He's able to rest himself on Sunday night, which is a nice position to be in as well. But you, all in all, to say that the distance between these two teams is so small and has been in these three games. All three games could have went any result for both teams. I'm just glad we came out on the right side of this one.
I mean, you mentioned the man Derek Walser there. Simon, he really took that game by the scruff of the neck. The breakaway goal with a cool finish on Ben Bounds, and that bullet from the face-off, which I'm surprised the cameraman even caught it. It was an epic finish, wasn't it?
Yeah, he took it very well. I don't think Ben Bounds was expecting it, to be honest. I mean, there was a few bodies in front of Lynette, and that's one thing we did really well this weekend. Mm-hmm. We did get bodies, you know, right in front of Ben Bounds. You know, if he can see the puck, he'll stop it. And any goal in this league should be doing the same. But one of the things that really impressed me on Saturday night was the energy the boys had, because, you know, there was a flu bug that literally was going right all the way through the camp last week. Steve Saviano really wasn't feeling too hot on Friday. He played Friday night, and he was brilliant on Friday night. He was even better on Saturday night. And Steve Saviano's really coming into his own at the minute. I thought he was outstanding. Derek Walser was brilliant. Matt Toe had a fantastic game. Stephen Murphy, again, you could go through. You could have struggled to pick a man in the match on Saturday night. And I just thought we genuinely deserved a win. I thought that the boys, you know, that game itself, if we had lost that game, we're going another 2 points behind the Cardiff Devils with only 11, 12 games gone in the season. And that would have been really, really difficult, even at this early stage, to claw back for us. And obviously, you know, in the last 18 months, Cardiff have just got the better of us. I don't think, I mean, I know they're going to be there or thereabouts at the end of this season for the championship, but I don't think they're a better team than us. I really don't. If we play the way we can play, then, you know, we're definitely going to be up there then towards the end of the season, down the stretch. But I think it's imperative that these next six away games, as Davey's already pointed out, these next six away games are absolutely crucial for us. And that week, that game on Saturday night against the Cardiff Devils, last home game for 4 weeks nearly, it was really, really important to get those 2 points. And it was a brilliant job done.
And important as well, because the Belfast Giants, of course, went into a two-goal lead. Cardiff pegged them back. There's probably a lot of fear in the home crowd, Davey, that it might not be your night to give up that two-goal lead. But another big shout-out for Stephen Murphy with a double save, which is going viral on Twitter on the Devils.
I sent Sizz and Johnny a tweet on Saturday night, you know, as they do, who do you think man of the match is? And for me, Stephen Murphy was man of the match for almost for that instance in the game. That was defining. It could be season defining, but it was certainly game defining. You know, the Devils were coming at us hard. That goes in. It's a completely different, you know, ending to the fairy tale. And Stephen Murphy comes up with an absolute unbelievable double save that keeps us in it, keeps our belief. And we go on to win the game on his back. You know, Stephen Murphy had however many saves, 20-something saves, and against a very, very good hockey club. And he deserved that win, because there's been times over the last, Simon said, over the last 18 months when it's been Bounds against Murphy, where he's been on the wrong side of some results where his teammates have let him down. But sometimes your goalie has to be your best player. And on Saturday night, Stephen Murphy, for me, was our best player.
And moving on to looking very briefly, Simon, at the Cardiff Devils, like we looked at five, there's one guy in particular. There was a lot of hoo-ha over the summer about these players, the McGrattans and the Bordalos coming in. By all accounts, Bordalos, I mean, I watched part of the game online. He just didn't turn up, didn't have any impact whatsoever on Saturday night in Belfast. Well, did that surprise you?
I don't know if surprise is the right word, Hitchy. I mean, for him coming in, and I have no idea what the guy's earning, but, you know, for the effort that he puts in, for the effort that he seems to be putting in, for me, he's not doing enough.
He can't be fit. It doesn't look fit, or else he's just swinging the lead. A few of these guys have came in. There's more than Westgarth. There's Westgarth, Bordalo, McGrattan, name a few others that have came in over the last number of years. And I've talked to Paddy at length on podcasts and off air about some of these guys come over here and they lose their edge. They come in expecting, like, I have that bet with Paul Wheeler that McGrattan and Bordalo would score 80 points between them. It's the easiest money I'll ever earn.
Listen, if he scores 80, and listen, honestly, I said to you last week, you can hardly skate, and I'm not the best anymore. But, you know, if we put the skates on right now, we've a better chance of getting 80 points for the rest of the season. It's not going to happen. At the end of the day, they're not brought in for that role. They're brought in for a role, maybe that, you know, to be a top teammate. McGrattan does look as if he's, you know, he does. When I was over in Nottingham a few weeks ago, he did look as if he was trying to basically do something. But Bordalo, for me, I mean, the only reason that I knew it was him on the ice is because he's bigger than everybody else. That's it. He did nothing. He hit Jeff Mason once in the, I think it was the second period.
And whenever we played...
He didn't even hit him hard.
Yeah, but whenever
hit him hard.
But whenever we played them in Cardiff the other week there, he threw one hit in the game against... It might have been Mace again. He's not going and trying to make game-changing shifts. He's not coming out with energy. He just seems to be going through the motion. And okay, he could be injured and maybe he can't get a dance partner. Maybe nobody wants to fight him. Why would you? You know, but at the same time, you've got to add something. And he's not adding anything to that team at the minute.
Well, again, at the end of the day, you know, I know we've got guys there who can stick up for their teammates and, you know, led by the captain, Adam Keefe. And, you know, Kiefer, I don't care what size you are. If Kiefer thinks that he needs to basically try and instigate something to, you know, to basically get our team back in the game, I don't care what size you are because he'll get stuck in. But Bordalo, for me, no. I just don't see what he brings. I didn't see what he brought on Saturday. I watched the game a few weeks ago on the webcast from Cardiff. But again, I just don't see the benefit of having him in that lineup. And, you know, I know they left, wasn't it Scott Hotham? I think they left out on Saturday night. And they brought him back in Sunday. But no, not for me. He doesn't do enough to justify whatever they're paying him.
Gone before the Christmas decorations are down?
Well, flip, I mean, I was going to say gone before the Christmas decorations are up. But one of my neighbours around the corner has got the Christmas tree up already. But... I honestly don't know, Davey. I really don't know what, you know, Andrew Lord and Todd Kellner are thinking. But if he was at Belfast and he wasn't away before Christmas playing the way he's playing, then I'd be very disappointed.
Well, you say that, but like, we hung on and hung on with Westgarth expecting something to change. And perhaps, you know, they've threw a lot of money at this guy, clearly, because these guys don't come over here for chump change. Like, so... assume that he's on decent money. And the same with Westgarth. You know, we were hoping upon hope, week after week, it's going to change. But we've been, you know, Bordalo's had the guts of 2 months now. And I've seen him live 3 times and a couple more times on video. He just hasn't done it.
Well, for me, I try and, I said it to Hitchy last week, I really don't care about the rest of the teams in the league. I'm just worrying about the Giants.
Great. Yeah. But we were asked the question, so...
No, I was asked a question. What do you listen to you? I mean, I was asked the question, is he worthwhile being there? In my opinion, no.
could have been answered in a lot quicker. So both games' highlights are available from Belfast Giants TV, and you can hear the White Barry White himself alongside Steelers legend Shane Johnson commentate on all those goals. After beating the top two as they were in the Elite League and moving up as they were on Saturday into second spot, the Giants turned their attention to a, well, let's not lie about it, it was a dead rubber in Edinburgh on Sunday night. But a lot of pride to play for as they seek to top the group in the Challenge Cup. A 6-2 win with goals from former Capital Rutherford, Quinnell, Saviano, two from Demeray and Boxhill. The Caps scoring two. One, I'm going to do a kitschy here and probably pronounce this completely incorrectly, Fyodorov and Johnson with the goals for Edinburgh. But the highlight of the game was the Andrew Dixon return as he faced 26 shots, making 24 saves on the way to that 6-2 win. Davey, first to you, two big wins in the league, third game in Scotland, a game you didn't have to win. How impressed are you with the actual, I guess, desire to make it a 6-point weekend and winning style with Dicko in the net?
I'm very pleased, obviously, with the result. I'm sure there was guys within on that bus on the way to Edinburgh thinking, what are we having to do this for? You know, half of them dying with the flu, as Simon said, and going to Edinburgh in a game that the result, we knew before the game started, the result didn't matter. The Dundee game had already been played. Giants topped the group no matter what happened. So one of those things, I clearly we didn't go through the motions. I haven't got the game downloaded there. I was about to start downloading, and I thought if I start downloading it, then the Skype will be crap. So I've still got to do that afterwards. And, but good to see Saviano, as I said, had a good weekend, got a goal. Desi getting a couple of goals. Quinnell getting his first goal for the club. Kiefer, after sitting out one game, comes back in, gets his first point of the season. There's lots of positives. And, of course, Dicko. Last week, someone had put on Twitter, you know, petitioning Derek Walser almost give Dicko next Sunday night, and I think we didn't sneer at it, but we sort of said we can't see that happening at the minute. But we were obviously didn't know the situation with Jackson Whistle at the time, so it's a fantastic situation that the club's in, that, you know, Whistle isn't 100%. Murphy's had back-to-back games, and you don't want to go back-to-back. You can throw Andrew Dixon in and he'll do you pride, and he comes up, he's one of our own, as we said on Twitter. Brilliant for the guy to come away with a win.
And also, Simon, nice to see Quinnell piping up with his first goal of the season for the Giants.
I would really like to see it. I haven't seen it. The highlights haven't been uploaded yet on Capitals TV, as far as I'm aware. So haven't seen it, but it's great for him to get his first goal. He played very well on the wing when he's been put up there in the last 2 weeks. And he played very well against Cardiff, threw a couple of good hits, and against Fife as well. So, you know, contributing, getting a goal in there as well, playing alongside the guys that he was. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Benny and somebody else. But getting the goal, excellent. And again, the most important thing was getting out that game healthy. And nobody, no injuries. Everybody came home Monday morning, felt good, got Monday and Tuesday off, and they're back to work on Wednesday morning.
So if it was like chatting to a pair of Arsene Wengers, neither of you seen it, the actual live broadcast didn't work. We assume this highlight's available on Caps TV. We'll talk more about the Challenge Cup later in the show, unless either of you guys have anything else to say about the game that 528 people saw live. No. Okay, so now we are going to move to look at around the league. Now, we've already dealt with the Russ Moyer incident. We've also been, heard the news today that Manchester Storm forward Cody Cartier's 2+10 penalty for checking to the head was going to be observed as well. Davey, do we have any update on that one? Do you know of?
Yeah, no further action, I believe.
That's nice to see that Dops are playing it consistent. So going back to the Challenge Cup, one of my favourite competitions in the world of sport, and the Belfast Giants did win Group A, which means they will face Belfast legend Neil Russell's Manchester Storm in the quarter-final. The other fixtures to be played will be Dundee versus Cardiff, Nottingham versus Brayhead, and Sheffield versus Edinburgh. The semi-final draw this year was held behind closed doors at the board meeting after last year's Marks and Spencer's Seth Bennett Mid-Eye Sheffield debacle. The fixtures for the semi-final will be, if the Belfast Giants beat Manchester, they will face Dundee or Cardiff, with the winner of Sheffield Edinburgh facing Nottingham Brayhead. It all sounds very familiar. Davey, a game against the Manchester Storm, flying over to your good friend Noel Russell's abode in Altrincham. What do you expect from that fixture?
They're a bit of a different beast this season. It's good to see them coming through that group. Coach likes to tell us almost on a daily basis that his players get it this season. I don't know what that says for them last season, but you know they've came out a lot stronger this season. They've got goals. They're a lot tighter at the back. A team not to be messed with. We're going to get our first look at them, and not this weekend, but next the NCAA weekend. We're in Manchester, so we're going to know a little bit better how the matchups are going to work. But I would say those games are going to be, you know, around pre-Christmas, just start of the new year. I would imagine to get them out of the way before the semi-finals. So coach isn't a Belfast man anymore. He's Manchester. You know, Paddy will tell you. I know he's listening in the sidelines, whether he can chirp in there or not. But like, you know, coach is Manchester the core now, and he'll be wanting to put one over Belfast. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
The Simon, looking at the draw, you've got Manchester, then you've got Dundee or Cardiff. Is this a real, real opportunity for the Belfast Giants to get to that Challenge Cup final in South Wales? I mean, it's a good opportunity to get silverware, which obviously the Giants have missed out on in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, vitally important that we win something this year, whether it's a Challenge Cup, the playoffs, or the league. I just think it's very, very, very important that we get our hands on something. And you know, this is a chance. You know, we haven't seen the Manchester Storm this year up against the Giants, and Davey touched on there. It's going to be next weekend, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And these the two games, the home and away. Like last year, you know, we went over and did the Paddy and myself called the game against the Manchester Storm in the Drizzle Dome for Downtown Radio, and you know, I expect it to be a tough game over there. And but I would fancy us to go through over the two legs. And then, you know, Dundee or Cardiff, there's no easy games. There's really no easy games. But I would prefer Dundee.
Absolutely. Well, it's all lined up, isn't it, for a Belfast-Sheffield final. Now, moving on to the next subject, which is quite a serious one. It's this week's Elite League Twitter scandal. There seems to be something always happening on social media in the Elite League. The Devils, Cardiff Devils player Andrew Hoffham tweeted an open-ended accusation at the Manchester Storm this week after their game in the Challenge Cup on Sunday in Cardiff, claiming for a Storm player or players to have used a homophobic slur during the game, adding reference to the hashtag You Can Play initiative that they brought into the British game, which has been highlighted across the globe in sport. Now, the tweet subsequently been deleted by Andrew Hoffman. We don't know whether he decided to delete it or he was told to. Now, Davey, firstly with you, I mean, a couple of questions spring to mind. The first is, is this the right way for a player of a sporting club to highlight an incident, were it true?
That's a very difficult question to answer, Hitchy, because you're dealing with an incredibly sensitive subject that polarises opinion to a certain extent. You know, some people will take, you know, I play sport, says has played, you know, we've all played sport to a certain level, and there's plenty of stuff that I would even say worse gets thrown out on a weekly basis. But you know, you sometimes you just knuckle down, you get on with it. It's a difficult one because other people will see it as absolutely abhorrent to, you know, bring someone's sexuality into a slur. Did he do the right thing in taking to Twitter? Probably not, because he swept with a broad brush rather than, you know, if he had been saying such and such a player called me such and such a thing, you know, calling somebody out. But I still think that at a professional level, these players have social media policies and stuff that they have to adhere to.
But what about those who would say, Davey, that he brings it to the fore, he stands up for what he believes, and he wants to out, and no pun intended, but he wants to out these people that are making such comments, whether it be homophobic, whether it be racial, whether it be anything.
It's a very fair point you make, but sometimes the position you're in doesn't allow you to do that. You know, should people have carte blanche to say what they want on social media? That's a different discussion. You know, the Elite League players have a responsibility with what they say on Twitter. They are governed by a set of rules laid down by the league, and this obviously crossed the line because the player himself realized that what he had put up wasn't the right way to do it. His club has censured him, or the league has said to the club that needs to come down. Some way along the line, that tweet has been taken down, and there has been no sort of follow-up tweak to it, you know, trying to say it in a different way or anything. The subject, is, I assume, has been handled between the Cardiff Devils and the Manchester Storm. I'm sure there's been discussions there as to why this happened. You know, so no, unfortunately, players aren't allowed personal opinions. It's just the way the rules are set. Should that be? That's not for me to say. You know, the rules are there. It's a very, very, we're going to expand on it here when Sizz has said his piece as well, but, you know, it's a very, very sensitive subject. It's difficult in, I hate to use the term, it's 2016, you know, it's a more publicised, you know, I don't really know where I'm going with this, Hitchy, to be honest. It's a very difficult, there's people that understand the situation better and people that are at the coalface and are facing these slurs probably feel it a lot more. And I don't know if it's just the You Can Play campaign that has brought this to the fore, but something has brought it to the, you know, to the attention that he wanted to put it on Twitter. So, you know, it does need dealt with.
I mean, Simon, you've played the game, and I don't even want to ask the question of what you may have heard over the years when you were in the Irish Hockey League. But if this is true, and this is happening in the modern day, with a lot of attention on things like stamping out homophobia, racism, I mean, how do you get rid of it in the game? How do you stamp it out if this is happening and it is true?
Well, I think everybody needs to buy into it. You know, as Davey's already touched on it, it's a very, very sensitive subject. What offends me might not offend you. Actually, there's a great chance if it doesn't offend me, it's not going to offend you. Yeah, it's a bad analogy. But, you know, what offends one person doesn't offend another. You know, with regards to what allegedly was said on the ice, listen, I've played, there's one incident against Turkey in the 2006 World Championships, and there's one of their players, Siplak. He's top player, Edmonton born, Turkish national. And, you know, he said something to me. I said something back to him. I got a dig in the beak. He got a 2-minute penalty, and we scored a power play goal to make it 2-2. That was a result for me. But with regards to what was said, it needs to stay on the ice. With regards to what allegedly was said on Sunday, and you know, for that homophobic, or sorry, alleged homophobic slur, in my opinion, is bang out of order. Absolutely bang out of order.
But where do you draw the line, Sizz? You know, not in thought police, but how do you police language? And how do you say that is unacceptable? Now, I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm asking a kind of rhetorical question. You know, how do you go about policing language? Because as you say, call me that, it's not going to annoy me, but it might annoy, very, very seriously annoy the person beside me. Who decides in this day and age what is and what is an offence? And whenever we come to the point of whatever was said or not said in Manchester, what is the next thing that's not allowed to be said? You know, who are the thought police here behind this?
Well, David, you know, was it said personally to Andrew Hotham? Was it between one player and another player, or was it, you know, shouted across the ice? Did the referee hear? Did if the referee heard that, you know, does the referee supposed to give an unsportsmanlike penalty and get, you know, get that certain player who allegedly threw the slur out of the game? I don't know what the rule is for it. I honestly don't know, but I just think that I think it needs to be addressed. I mean, I think it was Brian Burke, Brian Burke's son. Was involved, I think he was killed in a car accident, and he was gay. He was, you know, there's a lot of hockey players have come out and supported what Brian Burke was trying to do with, I think he was with Toronto at the time, and now he's at Calgary. And you know, the way he was coming out there and supporting the LGBTQ community and showing his support for that group of people, I think it was very, very strong coming from a GM in the National Hockey League. Now, the one thing that for me in this incident or alleged incident is that there's been nothing else said. So are they trying to sweep it under the carpet, or do they bring it? Do they have to go out there? Does the Elite League have to, you know, basically come out and have a ruling into it, guys? You know, that you've crossed the line there. You shouldn't have done it. I honestly don't know.
That's an interesting point, Simon, because we've seen a tweet, we've seen it deleted, we've seen a few could be argued tongue-in-cheek retorts. And should the league have come out and said, social media policy, you should not be tweeting that? Should the league come out and say, we want to reaffirm that we are fully behind this incentive to stop derogatory comments of this nature? The league have been quite, well, silent, haven't they?
I'm with you there, Hitchy. The league should be stating what the league's position is on this without going into any detail of Hotham's tweet or deleted tweet. We have a policy in this. This is our policy on abusive language. Let's call it that. We don't need to go into
this. This is my exact point, David. That's my exact point. It shouldn't be up to the clubs in this instance. It should be the league.
The league the league should be putting down a dictate to say racist language, homophobic language, or whatever. That's what I'm saying. That's my comment about the thought police or policing language. You know, then there needs to be almost like the old PSNI book that came out. These are the words that if anybody, you, as a police officer, there is a book the police officers get to say, these are words you can't say. There's hundreds of them. I remember a friend let me say it, and some of the words in it, you know, we were having a good laugh at about the time, because you wouldn't have found them offensive, but you cannot say this word. So if you're caught by a referee using this word on the ice, 2-minute penalty or 2-plus game or whatever, we are going to draw a very firm line in the sand, and you step over it, we will take firm and hard action. And this is what we're going to do, because the only way to drive things out like this is to drive them out. You can't be wishy-washy about them. If a player has made a homophobic slur about it, which is completely, as you said at the very start, absolutely, without doubt, unacceptable, then the league have to be the ones to referee this situation.
Well, we will see what the league comes up with next. Surely the ball is in the league's court, and we will wait to see if they come out with a statement. Now back to on ice action, guys. What were your standout performances or results of the weekend? I mean, me personally, it's very, very depressing to see Nottingham on such a poor run. Anything in particular that stands out for you guys?
That result in Sheffield, 8-1 against the Panthers. What is happening in Nottingham? I tweeted Aaron Lord on Saturday or Sunday, I think, I remember. Basically, I can't remember the Panthers losing 6 in a row in the league. Now, if that was any other team, bar maybe Edinburgh, with, you know, the challenges that Edinburgh have, you know, throughout the last number of seasons, 6 games in a row is unacceptable. And do they need a change? It's a real tough one, but I just don't understand what is going wrong down there. I know they've had injuries. Everybody's had injuries. Some, you know, maybe getting a little bit luckier than others. You know, we've had 3 or 4 guys out, 1 suspended, and we've managed to come up with a result. And sometimes you play your best hockey when you're down. You know, your back's against the wall, and you know, likes of down to maybe 10, 11, 12 players. But the Nottingham Panthers, for me, are just really, really struggling at the minute. And that result stood out in a country mile compared to every other result in the league this weekend.
Well, we've seen Continental Cup hangovers in the past, but I don't think we've ever seen one, Davey, have we? Of this, the only game they've won since they've come back was a Challenge Cup game they didn't even need to win. I mean, could it be down to being in Europe? Because they weren't playing that bad. They were doing quite well in the Elite League before they went to Spain and destroyed a team full of bin men from Turkey.
Just Eddie, for goodness sake.
Do you know the bit that really got me? Listen, man, again, I honestly don't watch the highlights of any other game in the league unless there's a real incident in the game that we're being asked to review on the podcast, or we're playing that team the next weekend and I've got to do my homework for Giants TV. But the bit that got me is Corey Nielsen didn't come out and do an interview. Rick Strachan did, and he said that they played well.
He said that they fought for every puck, and he said that they gave it their all. We're on the flip side.
If they're giving it their all, then they need to make major changes.
Well, you know, it's
8-1,
bad.
8-1 result against your biggest rival. Okay, it's away from home, but you know that's horrendous, absolutely horrendous.
Well, you know it's bad when the Steelers fans were actually tweeting that they weren't enjoying it in the end because they just weren't I'm sure Davey would have been enjoying it to the very last second of the game. But who knows what's happening at Nottingham, and Corey Nielsen is maybe a man under pressure there.
Potentially, don't get me wrong. I hope they go 7, 8, 9, 10 in a row without winning. You know, honestly do, but you know, there's something just not right down there.
Absolutely, absolutely. A couple of other bits of news here before we move on. Bruce Dickinson is dropping the puck in Cardiff this weekend. I saw a very humorous to and fro between Patrick and one of the Cardiff owners, one of those guys that saved the day, about Justin Bieber and an Iron Maiden and seven-year-old daughters. Anyway, let's move on. Player movements. The Coventry Blaze have made a couple of changes. Bombas and Carnival are out. Barry Almeida and TJ Snyder. TJ Snyder, what a name, are in for the Coventry Blaze. On the photograph, they look the same height as their head coach. So they've obviously gone for speed. Size isn't everything, people say. I don't agree with that. Manchester Storm have brought in injury cover with Scrabble winning name Nardo.
Try that again, because that's brilliant.
Could get that.
Come on.
Genius. I'm not reading that bit in brackets.
Big deep breath.
Okay. What was that?
Oh, do you remember this, Paddy? Like a good old days, mate.
Manchester Storm themselves have brought an injury cover in the shape of Scrabble award-winning name Nardo Nagazam. He'll be here for the short to medium term, hopefully here a bit longer than Biebs. On the Storm injury front, Eric Nielsen took a puck to the eye in a recent game. He tweeted the pictures up where his eye looked absolutely destroyed. I'm sure Simons shook off worse than that and carried on playing. But Any other things of note, guys, before we move on around the league? All good?
No, that injury to Eric Nielsen is absolutely horrendous. I mean, in all fairness, he's been very, very lucky. You know, I think he'll make a full recovery and you know, the swelling will go down and he'll be able to see again. But honestly, he's been very, very lucky there and I've been hit by a stray puck everyone, you know, there's a few places about my body, but honestly, I just think fair play to him and thank goodness he's okay.
So this brings up.
I know what you're going to say, Davey. I know what you're going to say. I'm wary of another hour monologue about full face masks. We've been here with you, Davey. I've read your thesis on it. Go on.
Full face mask. You know, just as a question, Simon, we've asked players about this before and they don't want to wear them. But, you know, they didn't always wear helmets at all. You know, they didn't always wear all the protective gear they do. I'd seen someone the other day saying, you know, it was like 1884, they started wearing, you know, a cup, but it was like 1974 before helmets were legal. So it took them 100 years to work out that their head was as important as their balls. You know, that puck is 1 inch higher. 1 inch, he's blinded for life. No doubt about that. He's taken a puck going 90 mile an hour to the face. He's been incredibly lucky. We wish him a speedy recovery and we're glad that he's okay. But it does open up that debate.
Yeah, it does. But again, I just think it should be a player's choice. That's my own view. I mean, we played the charity tournament for Dreams Come True in Cardiff in July. And on the 1st of August, the rule was the day after we finished the tournament, the 1st of August 2016, the rule came in. Anyone playing that level of hockey must wear at least a half visor. And that means next year, if I play, I've got to wear a half visor. And I've only ever wore it twice. I wore a full visor until I was 21. And then the half visor came in. But I only wore it when I get hit in the face with a puck. But as soon as that injury was okay, I got a couple of stitches just above my eye. And I got a couple of stitches in my mouth. And I put a full cage on for that. But as soon as the stitches were out, I just wanted to get the mask back off again. So it's a real difficult one. I just think if you, as a player at that level, I mean, Eric Nielsen chose not to wear one. I'm actually trying to think, is there anybody in the, I don't think there's anybody in the Giants without a half mask.
But it's a rule now. You have to wear a visor now in the IHL.
I mean, Guy, you've got to think though that in the world of sport, sadly, it's always a reaction to an incident, a horrific incident. The incident in the cricket in Australia in the last couple of years, where that player sadly passed away after taking a ball to the head. And the fact we have netting behind the goals. Let's not forget that the reason we've got netting behind the goals these days is because didn't a young child get hit by a hook in North America?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
no doubt that down the line, I don't understand whenever you see the quality of sport that the NCAA guys bring and that their whole careers they're brought up worrying. And I'm wondering, is there a machismo about it? You know, the guys feel that they have to take that mask off when they go into the bigger leagues. You know, they obviously the grandfather rule that, you know, once upon a time there was no helmets, and then it became compulsory after a certain age to wear a helmet. Then it became compulsory you have to wear a helmet with a visor. You know, that's, you have to wear a visor nowadays. I think there will be a time, and it's not years and years away, that you will have to wear a full face protection in this sport.
Well, we will wait and see. And Davey's dreams will come true, and he'll be watching 18 big burly men with full face masks on the ice in the SSC Arena in years to come. Nice link there to the NCAA there, Davey, because now we're going to look at a Friendship 4 preview. It's 2 weeks until the Friendship 4 returns to Northern Ireland, and only 2 schools to preview. So let's have a look at the University of St. Lawrence.
The St. Lawrence Skating Saints, with just 2 breaks due to World War II, have had a men's hockey team since 1925. The team, who don the scarlet and brown colors, have made 16 NCAA tournament appearances since the 1951-52 season, including representing their school 9 times in the Frozen Four and its antecedent. They played in the championship game in 1961 and 1988. Their 1988 appearance saw them lose to the Lake Superior State University at the Olympic Arena in Lake Placid, New York, home of the 1980 U.S. Olympic Miracle Team. The 1987-88 season was the Saints' most successful in team history, with an overall record of 29-9-0. The Saints also have the distinction of having played in the longest NCAA tournament game on record. It was a 3-2 quadruple overtime victory over the Boston University Terriers, which advanced the Saints to the Frozen Four, where they fell in the national semifinals to the Boston College Eagles. For St. Lawrence University, located in Canton, New York, their biggest rival is Clarkson University, located just 11 miles northeast in Potsdam. Games between these two teams are said to be as intense as they come. Belfast Giants defenseman Matt Nickerson knows something of this rivalry, as he attended Clarkson. St. Lawrence paraded a sign that said Nickerson eats babies at one of these games, after Nickerson had set an NCAA single season penalty minute record. Perhaps this is why the Belfast Giants will be on the road during this year's Friendship Four. The Saints have a new coach this season, Mark Morris, a graduate of Colgate University, one of the schools in the inaugural Friendship Four last year, who was named in May 2016, succeeding Greg Carvell, who had been there for 4 seasons. Carvell must really have wanted to come to Belfast, though, because he is now head coach of the UMass Minutemen, who will also be taking to the ice in Belfast this year. Mark Morris is the only coach to have won 300 collegiate games and over 300 professional games. St. Lawrence University is a school of just 2,000 students, one of the smallest schools to play Division I hockey. In fact, in all other sports, they are a Division III school. But don't let their size fool you. They speak to some impressive alumni, including retired NHLer Richard Peverly, who won the Stanley Cup with the Boston Bruins in 2011. Current NHL players include Brandon Bolig with the Calgary Flames and John Zeller with the Los Angeles Kings. And Ray Shero, who's now general manager of the New Jersey Devils, is another alumni, just to name a few. The Saints' record so far this season overall is 6-4-2, and within their conference they are 3-0-1. Their junior goaltender Kyle Hayton was named ECAC Hockey Goaltender of the Week on November 8th for his back-to-back shutouts with wins over Princeton and Quinnipiac, who will also be in Belfast this year, during the weekend of November 4th and 5th. These were Hayton's 9th and 10th shutouts of his career, helping him to surpass Bill Sloan, class of 1956, who held the record of most shutouts for the last 60 years. This is also Hayton's second honor as Goaltender of the Week this season. Given that Hayton denied Quinnipiac on November 5th, it is likely that these two teams will certainly be bringing memories of that game with them to Belfast, and that will make for an interesting and entertaining semifinal game on Friday between both of these schools.
So thank you to Rhonda McClure for that preview on the University of St. Lawrence. Now we're moving on to the fan agenda in association with Belfast Giants TV, looking at all the things you feel we should be talking about on A View from the Bridge. Now let's start off with an email. An email, Davey. Last time we were on the podcast together, you were crying out for emails. They're like London buses. Here we go from Mark Jameson. Hang on, let me have a look. Chris Lovell will go with first, actually. Should the point system, Davey, change? 3 points for a win, 2-1 for a split after overtime?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Oh, debate time. Davey?
Sizz.
What?
I meant to say Hetchy. What do you think, Mark?
I think yes. I think you should be rewarded. I know that you can get to the end of the season and win the league. I think we did it once where you have more regulation wins. But I think you should be rewarded for being able to win in 60 minutes. I think you'd see more fight towards the end of the games. I think sometimes you do see teams almost settling to go into overtime, knowing that they're going to get a point each. I personally would like to see 3 points for a regulation win.
That's what I was going to say.
Thank
if
you,
it's a regulation win, you get your 3 points. If it goes to overtime, you get 2-1.
And why do you say no, David?
Said no. I said yes.
No, but the current, he asked about the current system. Should it change?
Yes.
No, it should change 3-1. No, you only get 2 for a win at the minute.
Yes, so it should change.
Yeah. Who said that?
All right, then. Yeah, you're right. Sorry.
That's okay. I know I'm right.
No, but I just think 3 points for a win in regulation would be an excellent idea. Because
so actually, when you say no, says what you mean is yes. Thank you.
You're listening
to
the
Belfast. Now, I would be here coming home to your door and giving you a good knock up.
Aye.
Start listening. You're listening to the award-winning A View from the Bridge. Next one comes from James Connolly. Simon, first coming to you. Please, can we get replays in for the arena? It's 2016, says James. The technology exists. There is so much going on. There is no way to see everything. The game is too quick. This is not about undermining the refs. Rugby can do it. Let it help the refs. What do you think?
James Connolly. You're putting the referee in a difficult position, whereas there's nobody to help him in the arena. Whereas in rugby, they've got 4 or 5 different people looking at a computer and or a screen in a room in the arena itself. So and like the NHL, they all go back to Toronto for coaches.
Challenge.
The coach's challenge, yeah. So they've got that and they've got it back to Toronto. We haven't got that luxury here. So I just think you're putting the referee in a very, very, very difficult position and an already difficult position. So whatever the call is at this moment in time, he's just got to go. With regards to letting somebody else in the arena watch that, you know, we're lucky enough where we get to watch a replay if we ask for it from David or Neil. So, you know, 9 times out of 10, they can get that replay for us straight away so we can get a second look at it. And the referee's job's difficult enough without having to have 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people, you know, watching it on the screen while he's trying to watch the play develop in the next part of the game itself. So I don't think it'd be fair on the referee in the current system.
And what about the, I mean, this also, we're looking at the goal line technology. We've seen a couple of goals, haven't we, of either given or not given. Irvin Mustakov from Sheffield tweeted a clip of a goal that was given against him by Dundee at the weekend, which appeared to go under the side of the goal. I think Brayhead had one given against them at the weekend where it bounced off both posts and didn't actually go in. I mean, surely the goal line technology is the main one, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think that's very, very close, you know, in all the arenas. So, again, it's a directive from the Elite League that they wanted in this season, is my understanding. But it's just taken that little bit longer to get happening. I honestly don't think that it should be in one or two. I think it needs to be right the whole way throughout the league.
Okay. Now, we've got some audio clips now for the fan agenda. We're going to start with one here from Johnny McCulloch.
All right, boys, it's Johnny McCulloch here. Quick question for your TFA this week. Obviously coming off a big weekend there for the boys, picked up the three wins and finished off with Dicko getting the win there on Sunday night. Always good to see local representation for the Giants, especially Dicko there between the pipes getting the win. But leading on from that now leaves us with three active goalies on the roster and all three now have wins this season. I was just wondering, has that ever happened before in Giants history? And then leading on from that, has it ever happened before in Elite League history? Cheers.
Great question, Johnny. And one that at the minute, because of an issue with the Elite League statistics, that I can't 100% answer. In Theo Fleury's season, we had Mike Menard, certainly had wins. Nathan Creas certainly had wins. Chris McGimpsey was in nets, but I'm pretty sure that when Menard went down hurt and we thought Chris McGimpsey was going to come in, Chris McGimpsey went down hurt the exact same week. Jason Ellery dressed that season. David Shields dressed that season. I think Scott Bickerstaff dressed that season for us. You know, we had a lot of goaltenders. Did three win? Did Chris McGimpsey get a win? I will have to come back to you on that one.
Ooh.
Great question, Johnny. I will do more research. You only threw it at me today. And as I say, because of a bit of a glitch with EIHL stats at the minute, I just can't go back and check on Chris McGimpsey's wins that season.
Fair enough. You'll probably get back to us quicker than the Elite League would. Thank you for your question, Johnny. The next audio, which will be for you, Mr. Kitchen, comes from Steve Thompson.
Guys, having seen all the teams, bar Manchester Storm, so far this season, who has been the best signing, the worst signing, and the player has surprised you most league-wide?
God, that is a good question. The worst signing in the league is this? Or is that just in the Giants?
In the league. Apart from the Storm, who you haven't played.
The worst signing I've seen so far, Patrick Bortolo.
Okay. What about the best?
The best signing? I really, really like Joey Sides from Dundee. I think he's a real quality player. I mean, I've only seen him once in the SSE, and he really, really stood out for me. I think he's been a real good addition for Dundee this year. And the best team so far this year?
He didn't ask that. He asked the player that surprised you.
What's that, sorry?
He asked the player that surprised you. He didn't ask you that. Do you, you know, you give some respect to he's such a massive fan of the show, Stephen Thompson. Like, you sat there watching I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of There, when you should be on the podcast. Best signing, worst signing, player that surprised you. Come on, Simon.
I've got the, that's what I'm saying. The best player so far is Joey Sides. That's my opinion.
You were going to say who the best team was. He asked the player that surprised you.
Oh, right, okay. I'm not watching. I've got that on Sky Plus, so don't tell me who's done what. The best players just surprised me. It's a real difficult one. If I had had the heads up, I could have done a good bit of thinking. Can I come back to you? Like, Davey's coming back to you, Jonathan McCulloch?
Well, no, I maybe segue back into that question there, because I was just thinking, as Ciz was talking about that other question, we of course had the season where Colin Ryder came in as a bit of injury relief in the Ahern Trophy. We had Bales, obviously, and Cavillan would have won games that season, and Ryder obviously came in one. So we've definitely had I think Johnny's question, I just see him tweeting as well there, he's talking about having three active goalies, not for injury cover and all. So no would be the answer. We haven't had any out, but we have had three different goaltenders win games on the same season. But if I can jump in on that question, one player that's really impressed me this season, and he's not going to be up at the top end of the scoring, he's be a guy called Chris Jones from Cardiff. He's no respecter of reputation. He's came in and he takes a body every single shift. He's one of those guys. He's an energy player, or Johnny Boxley. He wants to come in and he wants to do well in every single shift. So I've been impressed by him a couple of times I've seen him.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Joey Sagg's been really impressive. Really impressive. And again, I've only watched him once, but he's definitely stuck in my mind. And if, you know, with regards to, it would have to be him. And I haven't seen Sheffield apart from on the webcast. So obviously we haven't played Manchester. But for me, it's definitely got to be Joey Sagg's.
Joey Sides, if he got a pound every time he was mentioned on A View from the Bridge, looks like Simon owes him £200. And the final audio we had was from Mark Jameson. Mark, over to you with your question.
Hi guys, for the TFA fan agenda, my question is, if you could pick any player from any team within the EIHL and not have to worry about salary, import levels or anything like that, who would you pick and why?
Andrew Lord.
As coach?
No. Just as a player, that blocks shots, as a player that's a leader. What is he, 6'3", 200-odd pounds, you know, he does a bit. Although, the one thing about him, Walser absolutely smoked away from him from pace. I thought Lord was quicker than what Walser made him look. Maybe Walser's quicker than I think he is. You know, Andrew Lord does a bit of everything for me. He kills penalty, he leads well, he plays a power play, he plays very well, even strength. He's big body, he's good in front of the net. He has a wee bit of everything, you know, so I just didn't want to say anyone from Sheffield or Nottingham, really.
And says Joey Sides?
No, I'm not going to say his name again. If it was from any other team in the league, if you'd asked me 3 weeks ago, I'd have said Tyler Mosienko.
Mm. Yeah, I'd say him now.
But he's not in the league, so it would have to be Armstrong from Sheffield.
Okay. What's it about John Armstrong that's impressed you from what you've seen so far?
Again, I've only watched one game of highlights, and I've watched the webcast, and he's just quality. He's you know, he looks like he's got great vision, and he can move. I mean, there was one shift that he had against the Giants where he created that penalty and then they scored on the PP in the third period against us. And I just think he's a real quality addition to the Sheffield Steelers this year. And that's overlooking Matthew Waugh, who's been outstanding. But I would definitely take John Armstrong.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for your questions. The emails after Davey's passionate plea to bring back the lost art of sending an email, and also for your audio. Keep them coming through the week at AVFTB on Twitter, hashtag TFA. Now, looking forward to the weekend, the Giants begin their monumental run of away games, don't they, after the Cardiff game. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 they've got on the spin away from home, starting on Saturday night at the DIA in Dundee. The Dundee Stars lost their last game on Sunday evening against the Sheffield Steelers, and they'll be looking to get back into winning ways. Davey, what do you expect from the game in Dundee? I mean, you've done okay recently away from home as the Giants. Are you expecting to go in there and pick up 2 points?
Difficult to, you know, any team with Joey Sides in it is going to be a difficult team to play against. But
my side is splitting, guys. Carry on.
But you know, I'm obviously a big fan of Dundee with you know, BFF, you know, Mark Lefebvre up there, and they've got good goaltending, and they're good in the back end. They've got speed. They're relentless. They're a good hockey club, and we've come up against them over the last couple of seasons, and they've always been high scoring affairs. We seem to have got a few goals in us over the recent couple of weeks and night. But I think if we stick to our system, I say this every week, you know, play it back. Stick to our system, stick to keeping shots from the outside, get a good game from your goaltender. You know, we're going to be hard to beat.
Says the Giants have won there away from home this season in the Cup, but the Stars have had some big picked up some big wins. I mean, they lost to the Steelers last weekend, but the week before they actually shut out the Steelers 4-0 at home, so it's not going to be an easy task, is it? by any account.
No, again, there's no easy games in this league this year. You know, the Dundee Stars have, you know, Davies already touched on. Fallon's a good goalie. We've seen him here in the SSE in September, and he was excellent that night as well. You know, he makes it look easy. He just, you know, he's a big lad, and he covers the bottom of his net very well. He's got a really quick glove hand as well. So it'll be, I'm expecting a really tough game, but to be honest, I think we'll win that game on Saturday night. I think Dundee have actually got Coventry on the Friday night as well, isn't that right?
Yeah, they've got a training session here on the Friday night.
You know, I wouldn't call it a training session. Coventry are, you know, again, there's just no, I mean, we thought it was a training session against Coventry to beat us. So, you know, it's going to be a really tough game, but I fancy us to pick up the 2 points.
Well, the game will be available on Stars TV. As Simon points out, it'll be the second game of the weekend for the Stars. Sescon's been out injured recently. We don't quite know of his situation. Will he be back on Saturday night? You can find out by tuning into that webcast.
Is Joey Sides playing?
Joey Sides is playing on Saturday night. And after the game, the Giants will wave goodbye to Joey Sides and leave the Joey Sides Arena to drive down to Sheffield for a huge game on Sunday night at the arena in South Yorkshire. The Steelers heavily weighted in terms of the form between the teams in the last 10, 8-2. One previous game this season, 5-1 victory for the Steelers, which had a bit of a meltdown for the Giants when it was quite even before that. Simon, I'm going to come to you first on this one. Is this the biggest test of the season so far for the Belfast Giants?
Yes, I think it is. You know, again, you picked up 3 wins from 3 over this past weekend. Previous Nottingham, you know, so we're on a four game run, and we want to make that continue. If we can get a really good result on Saturday night against Dundee, and try to take a bit more momentum into the game and on Sunday in Sheffield, it's going to be a real tight game. And you know, I think if you offered me 3 points from 4 this weekend, I would bite your arm off for it.
I mean, it's a big game, Davey, for Coach Derek Walsh. I don't believe he's won yet in the Sheffield Arena. If I'm wrong, I apologise, but I don't think he has done. What areas of Sheffield's game do the Giants really have to exploit here to pick up the win?
We've got to get inside. We've got to get inside the dots and plant someone in front of Mustakov's. The last time we went there, we were kind of perimeter. Now, that was a lot down to Sheffield's defence. You know, we need to get inside it. We discussed on that show leading up to that game that Mustakov has a tendency to concede 1-10. You know, he's a 90% goalie at the minute. He's given a lot of rebounds out. And his stats going on from that, you know, in different games, we'd say the same. We just don't seem to have put enough rubber on him and had anyone crashing in for the garbage goal, if you want to call it that. You know, we need to get inside. We need to drive that blue paint. We need to, you know, David Rutherford doing what he did on Friday and Saturday night. And we need to then open up power play opportunities. That's, you know, Rudy goes in there, wins the power plays, and we need to get that power play clicking. Special teams are going to be really key. I think that the battle of the goaltenders, there isn't much between them. We're getting good quality goaltending, and you're getting good quality goaltending. So it's down to those fine margins again, and special teams are going to be critical in this game. And we need to be on the top of our special teams. It has improved over the last sort of 2-3 games. We're getting results now in our power play that were deserved, that we weren't getting previously. Our power play wasn't bad. It just lacked a little something, and we've got goals over the last couple of weekends, so that needs to continue. And as I say, we just need to get inside those dots and start getting rubber on net.
We talked about the fact Dundee play Friday night, Giants don't. Fatigue might play a part for the Stars. Steelers play Friday night, they have Saturday night off. So, Simon, how will that play maybe on Coach Derek Walsh's mind? You've got the game on Saturday, you've got the drive to Sheffield, you're playing a team that's had a bit of a rest. It's going to be very difficult physically, isn't it, to compete with a very deep roster in Sheffield in that scenario?
It's always going to be difficult, Hitchie. You know, it's going to be a really, really tough game. But he'll not even be thinking about Sunday night. You know, he'll be concentrating on Saturday, getting the points on Saturday. And I'm guessing the guys will probably drive, you know, leave Dundee straight away after the game and drive down to maybe the likes of Newcastle or Scotch Corner or something, and then you're only 90 minutes, 2 hours away from Sheffield. So I would say that'll be the course for them on a Saturday night. Get a good lie on Sunday morning, and then head down to the Sheffield Arena. So it'd be interesting to see how it pans out, but I think it's going to be I'm actually really looking forward to it. But again, Derek Walzer, I'm not even have it in his head until he gets Saturday night out of the way.
Huge, huge game indeed. The webcast will be available from Steelers TV. That had a little bit of a break from webcasting Sheffield after a unnamed pub in Nottingham decided not to pay commercial rates, allegedly. And it'll be the first time the Giants fans get to see the Davey Majimpsey themed Sheffield Steelers head-to-toe orange kit on Sunday night, 5 o'clock at the Sheffield Arena. So that's the weekend. Moving on to any other business, guys, there's a couple of pointers here. Now, the first one, I am going to apologise profusely. I have tried in my head to pronounce this. There's an Irish language programme that's contacted View from the Bridge about an article they did on the Belfast Giants featuring Paul Mayer of the Northern Ireland Tridents, Stephen Thornton, and we believe former A View from the Bridge panellist Connor Caldwell. It's going to be on BBC Two Northern Ireland on Monday, the 21st of November. That's my wife's birthday. I need to remember that, 10 p.m. Be sure to tune in. And it's subtitled for everybody watching. That's British. The programme is called I can't say it. Maybe the flu-inflicted Paddy Smith can jump in and hit us with his gorgeous Irish tones.
Good evening, everybody. Ilar and Anach. Bye.
Okay, so make sure you tune in for that one. We're also, it says here on a view on any other business, we're in, Davey, you might know more about this. High-level negotiations are underway about A View from the Bridge live at McCool's over the Christmas period. Tell me more, Davey.
Patrick Smith will be back in the country. I will be back in the motherland myself. Aaron will probably be there, unless Northern Ireland or Linfield are playing that day. Sizz will be there, special guests will be there, but the stage is booked, the microphones are charged, and I believe Premier Sports and TV's very own Neil Coach Russell will also be in the building, and no doubt scarf on and on stage.
So it's going to be on the Manchester Storm game, you think, 28th of December?
I believe that is the date we're aiming for.
Oh, fantastic news. And obviously, Neil's got a lot to prove now with the new man on the block, Simon Kitchen of Premier Sports, pitch side during international football. It's going to be a little bit of tension between the two of you, Simon.
No tension. I'm a homer, mate. I'm the homer.
You're a what, sorry?
I'm the homer.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were going to batter around the league. There,
he's an away player now. He's an away player. Manchester Storm. It's all about the home team.
Okay. Round the table. So, any other business?
Yes, I have a little bit. Oh dear, back to. Oh dear. The Gander Flyers got beat at the weekend again. Disappointing. They're bottom of the three team league at the minute. So things can only get better.
D-Ream. Anything more from you, Simon?
No, I'm just looking forward to... Actually, do you know what? Yes, Davey, question for you.
All right.
How good is Joey Sides?
Yeah, have you seen Joey Sides playing? No. Have you... our six away games, our next six games are away from home.
Yes.
Acceptable points. What would you be happy with out of those 12 points?
Who do we play?
I'll tell you.
Stop, man.
I've got it here, right here, lads. You've got... So... Starting with
Dundee, Sheffield this weekend.
Dundee, Sheffield, Nottingham, Manchester, Fife, and Edinburgh. So actually, you've got Sheffield and Nottingham in the conference, and you've got cross conference games in Dundee, Fife, and Edinburgh. So,
I think that says the way we've played against Fife recently. Dundee's going to be a hard place to go into. I'll take a point in Dundee. I want us badly to take 2 points out of Sheffield just to set that marker down. I see no reason why we can't turn Nottingham over again and win the other two Scottish games. So I'm talking 10, 11 points is probably an unrealistic return, but that's what I would like.
Okay.
And what yourself? Would you say, Simon?
Well, I would be... I don't think anything less than 8 would be acceptable. I think there's 8 points definitely up for available out of those three weekends. But you know, I would like 9, but I think 8 would be a good target out of those six games. Sorry.
And any other business from the man in the waiting in the wings, Mr. Smith?
I'm going to get a lamb sip.
Other medical hot drinks are available.
Just one very quick one. Laura Small is obviously involved again. Not herself. She's not growing a beard herself that I'm aware of. But the guys are doing the Movember again. And we'll tweet up their link. Anyone's got a few quid to spare their, you know, money going to a really good cause as usual. And there's some real rascal moustaches in that locker room at the minute.
Fantastic. Yeah, we'll get that on the Twitter. So, yes, the away run starts now. The next home game, I'll be there. It'll be on Saturday the 10th of December against the Sheffield Steelers. And it's not been confirmed yet, but I'm 100% convinced that I will be sat next to Simon Kitchen on comms on Giants TV. You heard it here first.
No, you won't.
Okay, well, that might be something I've made up. Thank you very much to both David Majimsey and Simon Kitchen. I've been brought in like a substitute teacher that no one has any respect for. Story of my life. I've been Mark Hitchcock, and this has been A View from the Bridge. Thank you, guys, and have a great evening. Still you rise. Still you rise.